Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome. It's Friday and you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. We are your home for paranormal talk radio 5 days a week. You never have to miss another minute in the best of paranormal talk radio. Subscribe for it right here on Podcast One, Beyond the Darkness. You get a 60 to 90 minute episode every day as we look at all aspects of the strange and unusual world around us, from ghosts to UFOs, Bigfoot, psychic phenomena, monsters, myths, legends, conspiracy theories, and more. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me on this ride, Tim Dennis. And today we've got the return of Theater of the Mind, which is a really weird story coming up for you a little bit later on in the show. But let's jump right into this. John Kuykendall is our guest for the evening, the author of Haunted America, Do You Believe?, a lead investigator of USA Paranormal, and author of countless other paranormal and horror books. He is here to talk to us about some of the most haunted locations he's had a chance to investigate, some of his own personal and strange encounters, plus his whole new aspect of his investigative career, looking into claims of Bigfoot and Sasquatch. We'll do that part a little bit later on in the show. But, John, welcome to Beyond the Darkness. Thanks for being here today.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to chat with you. You've certainly built up quite a resume and have had a chance to investigate for quite a while. What started your journey on this paranormal path?
You know, that's been asked me so many times. And I know everyone's probably seen the movie The Haunting in Connecticut.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that was something similar to what I went through when I was about 5, 6 years old. And what got me interested in all of this later in life, because it actually did haunt me for a long time, was my mother was, again, looking for a home close to work. Her and my dad were going through some issues, and more because he was an alcoholic, and so she was looking for a place to get away from him. So she was driving to work one day, and she saw this house that was up for rent, and it was some old house that was built back in like the late 1700s. So she stopped and she made a phone call to the number that was on the sign, and sure enough, within, you know, a month or so, you know, we were moving into this weird-looking, strange, I'm this weird-looking house. So we moved into this house when I was between 5 and 6, and it was really a creepy house. I mean, it really, to me, didn't look like a place that we lived at before, but this was, just had strange doors and strange rooms and just had a kind of a weird smell about it. Kind of big, kind of looked like, you know, walking into, just a big, you know, a big array of like a bunch of, old, I don't know, like walking back in time, you know, it was really a crazy looking house. So anyway, so we move into this house and
how many of there are you when you move into this place?
There's like 5 of us. There's 5 kids at the time. There was me and my 4 sisters.
You and your 4 sisters, and then your mom and your dad?
No, my dad was not there.
Okay, so
she went to get away from me.
Gotcha. Right, right. Okay, so it's you, your 4 sisters, and your mom. All right, now we've got the stage set. And what happens next?
Okay, so this house, let me give you a little, let me tell you about the house before I tell you actually what it was. So everyone's kind of like looking at the bedrooms and things that it had. Well, some of these rooms to me didn't really look like bedrooms. You know, it looked like something else belonged in these rooms. But the rooms that we got, me and two of my sisters got, there was a room that was in the back, and then there was like a ramp that came up to this room, and we didn't know what this ramp was for. Well, when you walk into this room, on the walls were three beds, you know, metal beds, you know, like those stainless type steel metal beds.
Are you talking like almost like hospital or industrial style beds?
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, they were like that, but they were mounted to the wall. In three. And so we were kind of looking at that, and I said, oh, these are kind of cool, I guess, you know. My sisters are going, you know, these are really cold. You know, like their hands on these are really cold. Mom said, oh, yeah, this is an old house. You know, these are bunk beds. You guys can sleep here. And, okay, whatever. You know, we would do that. But these beds that we thought were bunk beds were actually slabs for bodies. And because this house used to be the mortuary, the place where they would come to their wakes and their viewings, and the mortician would get bodies ready. This is where they would keep the bodies before they brought them out. And this is where we, you know, got to sleep. Well, across the street from this house.
Well, wait a minute. How long did it take you? How long did it take you of living there before that bit of information was revealed?
Oh, that was within days.
Okay, so you're a kid. It's revealed to your mom. Does she tell you this used to be a funeral home and a mortician's home?
No, we found this part out about a month after.
Okay,
but you know, we knew my sisters. You know, my older sister, she was like 14 or 15. She knew what they were. You know, she had already knew. You know, she said, this was some creepy place. You know, she said, I'm not sleeping in here, which she didn't. One of them, she went to a different part of the house. But this is what she told us. These are body beds. You don't want to sleep here, you know. And I didn't want to. She was talking about body beds, you know. These beds we sleep on, you know, so we thought we're kids. Okay, we're bodies, so we'll sleep on them. But anyway, but across the street from this house where they had built the new mortuary, and so they rented out the place that was across the street, which is the house that we rented. So we'd always go out front and we would see the other mortuary across the street. And so it was kind of like weird to walk out there and see funerals going on all the time.
Right.
Yeah, you know, we're watching, you know, hearses come in, and they one time they had brought the casket out of a hearse that was parked in front and took it up the front steps. So we had to watch these as kids. So anyway, this house that we lived in, the dining room that we all ate in was actually the viewing room for the bodies when they brought them in and then put them in the caskets. And people would sit there and they would watch these bodies and pay their respects or whatever that they would do. This is a place that we would be eating in every day. There's now a dining room and had these big, big brown doors that close, heavy doors, sliding doors. But when you would sit there and eat, you know, you're kind of like looking around and it was kind of like a creepy place to eat. This house is just always creepy all the time. And so this house, as we went on, about a month later, you know, my mom was sitting, actually we were sitting in the dining room one night. And she told us, she says, well, you guys know, she says, I should let you know that this place used to be, the mortuary across the street owns this house. And this, where we're sitting at right now, is where they used to bring in, you know, the bodies, and people would sit here and pay their respects to their loved ones, you know. But, you know, me at 5 or 6 years old, I didn't really think it was that creepy because I really wasn't understanding too much of what she was talking about. I thought it was kind of cool, you know. But this house, though, over time, actually, there was one of my birthdays I think it was like within 8 months of the time that we were staying there. My aunt, well, she's crazy in the paranormal stuff. She's always been that way. Well, it was my birthday. It was my 6th birthday. She came over with a present. I opened it up, and guess what it was? I didn't know what it was, but I'm going to tell you what it was. It was a Ouija board. And she told me that
the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I mean, but she told me, you know, because I had just started school, you know, and she said, you know, here's a spelling game for you. I brought you a spelling game. So I, okay, whatever, you know, I thought it was, you know, a cool thing. But my sister, you know, my sister, my oldest sister, Debbie, she, you know, knew what this was, you know, and she wanted to play with it, you know. So she took it from me and she started messing with this board, you know, and she was doing some weird things with this board, and I didn't know what she was doing with this board. You know, they had this little, you know, little triangle thing on it, and she was just talking to it, and this thing's moving around, and I really didn't know what she was doing. But after this Ouija board experience, she was messing with this for about 3 months. And after that experience with this Ouija board going off in this house, like she was using it like every night, crazy things started to happen. And this is where we're back again. We're sleeping in the room in the back where these beds were, and this ramp's going down this little back door area. And we're laying there, and I would hear, at nighttime, I would hear that door open and shut. And, you know, it's kind of like creeping me out. I thought, you know, maybe some animal or something was trying to get in or out of the door. So I would get off my bed, and I would walk down around the little area where the door was at, and I would never see anything, but I would always hear it. Okay, so I'd go back to bed, you know, and then my sister, the one who slept in the middle bunk, would wake up screaming at night and say that something was grabbing her feet. And, okay, so whatever, you know, we didn't, you know, like I said, I was still young, didn't understand what, you know, she thought maybe she was dreaming, you know, whatever. Until one night, I got woken up, you know, it was early dark in the morning time, and this figure about 6 foot tall was standing at the end of these bunk beds that we, you know, were sleeping in. And it was pulling like on my right foot. And that was the scariest thing I ever saw in my, you know, my young life, was to have this black mass, and you could see a little arm extended on it, but you could feel it pulling on your foot. And so now I know what my sister was talking about, you know, about this thing, what was, you know, these things were coming in here at nighttime. We don't know, you know, not later in life, I'm thinking about, well, maybe this is where they were laying at, and they just wanted to come back and lay here and learn it's out of their bed. You know, in another instance in the house, in my mother's room, which was actually, there was a bathroom that separated the room we were in and the room that she was in. And my sister, we were in the kitchen making a sandwich for lunch, and my sister starts yelling at something. And so she's saying, John, bring me a knife. And I didn't know, what do you mean, bring you a knife? She says, bring me a butcher knife. So okay, I grabbed the butcher knife, and I went down to my mom's room, and I gave it to her. And she says, look at that curtain. Because my mom never liked doors on her closet. She liked curtains. So she always had the doors taken off and put curtains on them. And she says, look at the curtain. So I'm looking across the room, I look at the curtain, and you can see it billowing out. There's like there's something in there pushing out on the curtain, you know. And I go, well, you know what? That's probably a cat, you know, because she had this stray cat that the kids would always, you know, the girls would always bring in the house. I thought it was the cat in there just messing around. No, so she told me, she says, go over there and open the curtain because I'm going to throw this knife at it, whatever's in there. I'm going to fix and throw this knife. And so, okay, so dumb me as a kid, you know, I walked towards the curtain and it's still kind of billowing out as I walked towards it. And she says, open it. And so I opened up this curtain, and as soon as I opened up this curtain, I don't know what it was, but something came through me, went right through me, like cold. It was like really cold, and then it made a turn behind me, went through my mother's bed and out the wall. And I saw it like maybe for 2 seconds, you know, and then all the girls started screaming.
And how old were you at this age?
Six.
Six. And obviously, it burned enough image into your brain of what you just saw. Was there any other sensations? Were there smells? Were there any physical sensations from this thing? A breeze from it moving through the room? What can you tell us about that?
No, what that was, when this thing came out, it was like a cold sensation. Not really like a breeze, but it was like something like a cold shock that went through you like really quick. And like you jumped in and out of ice real quick. And then it just moved off, and then the sensation went away. Now when this thing at night would come and it would pull on our feet, it was always cold. It was always like a cold sensation of a tug pulling on our feet. Now, you know, this thing with this Ouija board, because the girl started telling my mom what was going on in the house, and she thought everybody was kind of nuts, you know. But my mom, you know, she knew what Ouija boards were. I mean, my sister knew what Ouija boards were. And then my mom had asked Debbie, she says, "Have you been playing with this Ouija board?" And she says, "Yeah." She says, "I've been playing with it, you know." And she says, "Well, you know, I think it's time that, you know, you get it out of the house, because this might be, you know, why you guys are acting like a bunch of idiots around here, thinking there's a bunch of, you know, ghosts in the house." Well, she, you know, okay, I'll get rid of it type thing, you know, but she never did. She never did. She took it to her room and she would put it underneath her bed, you know. But she got, my sister Debbie, she got really into this Ouija board really, really bad. You know, and then she would have her friends over, and then her and her friends would be doing it in her room when my mom was at work. This later had something attached to her, because she had something follow her for like 17 years after this. And we all thought it might have been a demon, because it was very violent, you know, this thing that would follow her no matter where she went. But everything accumulated, you know, and started in this house. We would see things, you know, walking, you know, across doorways. You would see shadows walk across the doors. We'd be in the bathroom taking a bath, and you would see these, like, black masses, like, stand in front of you for a second, and then they would leave. We'd always hear the doors open and shut. We'd hear doors rattle. We'd hear all these weird things walking in the attic. All kinds of things would happen in this house. So we stayed there for, you know, a better part of 3 years, you know, and these things were like common, you know. I mean, nothing really at that time, like nothing, you know, that would hurt us, but stuff that would really scare us. I saw a little girl in my kitchen when I went in there to get a soda. There was some little girl standing there by my refrigerator, you know. And she, so, you know, she just kind of like dissipated. It's like, gave me like her eyes like winked at me, and then she dissipated. And I saw her for about 4 or 5 seconds. But this ramp thing that was in the back of our room was a place where we would reel in the bodies on the caskets, and they would reel them in there. And then they would, or the gurneys, whatever they used, and they would put them on these beds. But that room was, though, but this happened, these things came in this room, and they would be walking in and out of this room for years, you know. But something always wanted to get back on the bed that we were in. Something was always pulling on it, like, you know, it wanted back on these beds. So there came a time where I decided, you know, I got so scared after a while, you know, I wanted to, you know, sleep outside. I asked my mom if I could put a tent outside on the grass, and they had a big old yard. You know, because I didn't want to sleep in the room anymore, because these things got more intense over time. You know, these things were like coming, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a night, you know, just terrorizing us, you know, in a sense to where, you know, it was really scary, you know. And sometimes we would get some like smell of like lilacs, or smells of roses. And then sometimes we would get like decaying smells, you know, like there was a dead rat in the wall. But this was the catalyst of what started me wanting to see what these things were as I got a little bit older, you know. And as I got older, I would talk to my aunt, who was always into the paranormal. She would be telling me that, oh yeah, you know, these things do exist. My father comes and sees me all the time. You know, oh, he rides in the car with me, you know. And we have conversations. I come home from work, he's sitting on my couch. You know, and so I'm thinking, wow, this is really, you know, strange. But now some other things here that got me a little bit wanting to know what was going on was when I met this thing that was following my sister for 17 years.
Oh, yeah, you were saying that. You picked up on this fact a little bit ago. This followed your sister for 17 years after moving into this house. Or are you including the 17 years included the time in the house?
No, this was like way after we left the house, but this is where it all started. So everything in her life, my life, I had a couple other sisters that had some experiences.
Well, let's listen to that, and we'll do that right after this. Well, now, John, we've heard about some of your experiences in this home, and you said that while doing this, you believe that your sister opened herself to something that stayed with her for 17 years. And this was different experience than anybody else in your family ever had?
Yes, this was a more darker experience that she had, because she was the one actually playing with the Ouija board, and she got addicted to it. And like I said, I may have saw it, you know, play with it maybe, you know, three times since my aunt had given it to me. But she played with this for a long time in that house. And now she finally got a little bit older. She met this guy, and okay, so she got married, and then she eventually moved out of that house. Now, she didn't tell anyone about these experiences that she had for a few years even after she had moved out. I believe the first time I experienced something while I was with her, she was babysitting me. I think I was 9 or 10, and I went to her apartment, and, spending my mom was, I think, going to Las Vegas or something. So I went over there to stay with her, and this was like in the middle of the daytime. Her husband was at work. He worked for the sanitation department at the time. And she was in the process of cleaning her house. Now, I'm sitting in the living room watching cartoons on TV, and she's vacuuming, and she's in the hallway vacuuming. And now in front of this, her couch, she had this, it was like an old-type looking table, glass table, and it was really heavy. It was made out of some type of brass or something. But it had to weigh at least 75 pounds, but it was a really heavy table. So anyway, I'm sitting there, I'm watching cartoons, and I hear her talking or saying something, but I really can't get what she was saying. And then she yelled something out, like, leave me alone or get away or something like that, I heard. And when she did that, within a few seconds, this table that was sitting in front of us had shot about 5-6 feet and went straight in front of the TV by itself.
Wow.
While I'm sitting there.
Okay.
And that was one of the first things I ever saw. And I just sat there, and I'm looking, and my sister is still, like, talking or communicating with something in the hallway, whether it's vacuum cleaners running. And I got up, and I'm looking at the table. And what the hell is going on? You know, I'm looking to say something maybe pulled it or what, but then this, you know, the glass breaks, it shatters straight down. It goes, bam, it shatters. At that point, I ran out of the house. That scared the living crap out of me. So I ran out of the house. And I went to my sister's friends that lived a few buildings down, and I'm knocking on that door. And I'm telling her, you know, I said, you know, I need to call my mom. She goes, honey, what's the matter? You know, and I go, I don't know. There's something going on in my sister's house. I don't want to be in there anymore. So I told her, I said, you know, you might want to go down there and check on her because I'm not going back in that house. So she had went down, I guess, and went into the house, and she comes out screaming. And she says, hell no. So she went back in the house. She says, honey, what's your mom's phone number? I go, I didn't even know the phone number, you know. But she wasn't even in town anyway. She was in Nevada at the time. But my sister had these, these experiences with whatever it was at the time, would try to do things to her, you know. One night, this was Martin was telling me, it's actually a story that he had told me in, when I was about 19, and he said, one night, he said, her and him and my sister were in bed, and he says, and he gets woken up with a voice over the left side of his ear, and he said that he woke up, and he turned, and he looked at the wall where this voice was coming from, and he says this glow of a face came on the wall, and it was telling him or telling him or her or whatever to go back. And he didn't understand what it meant to go back, get away or go back to, at that point. And then he says, and the next thing you know, a big jolt, because he was, I guess he had his arm around my sister, a big jolt came on her at her feet, and something tried to pull her out of the bed, something was trying to grab her. And he turned and he looked, and he didn't see anything trying to grab her. He said, what the hell's going on? So he grabbed onto her, but he felt the jerking and the pulling. And so what he figured, what happened was that this figure that was on the wall behind him telling him to go back or whatever was telling the thing that was in the room to go back or get back, to stay away from my sisters. So he thought it was some type of angel that had came at that particular time. He doesn't know why, and had told this malevolent thing to get back, because it knew that it was there trying to take her. But yeah, this happened. A lot of things happened to her, over the years. And she lost two husbands because of it, that divorced her because they couldn't deal with the things that were going on in her life. This was, I think it was, she was about, how old was she then? She was in her late 20s. It probably, all this stuff stopped, and she was about 32 or so. So by the time she was 15, so yeah, about 32, it all stopped. Completely stopped, and she doesn't really know why.
So there's no, it wasn't like she was going in for an exorcism or psychic clearings or anything.
Like
it just
just something that was just following her, like attached to her, or maybe something thought she was a light. I don't know, exactly what this was, because no one really seemed to know what it was. Well, all we know is it was really violent. And like I said, I witnessed a couple of things from her, but for me, it was all these crazy things that would happen in this house, things that I would see,
Why didn't she seek help to try to figure out what this was, the clergy or something, to try to break
I think she did at one time. I think she did. She went to saw a Catholic priest at one time, and he told her to go see a doctor. To go see a psychiatrist because he didn't believe her, but this,
there were other eyewitnesses.
Exactly. But see, back then, the churches, they didn't want to believe that these things existed anyway, especially the Catholic Church, but she did. She went and saw a Catholic priest, and he told her to go see a doctor. Well, you need to see a psychiatrist. That's who's there to help you.
After all this activity, this would be the kind of thing a lot of people would break from. You seem to be drawn more towards it. Let's discuss that, and we'll also talk about your new passion in the paranormal as we return to more of Beyond the Darkness and Legends of the Peak next. It's time to once again open the doors to the Dark Hives in a brand new theater of the mind. This, a true story of the supernatural, surrounded by a listener that wishes to remain anonymous. We've never figured this out, and now the three living witnesses have to be good and drunk to even discuss this entire thing. Now, I was about 7, my brother 10, my mom in her early 40s, and my grandmother, her mom, in her 60s. So we were all cogent. No one was too young or too senile to not recall this nonsense. Yet here we sit all these years later with absolutely no answer to what happened. Grandma lived on an isolated country road in North Carolina that was named after her family, since they were the only crazy people who lived on that land for about 1,000 acres, and I do mean crazy. Now, we have stories about relatives that start with, "You remember that time Uncle Bob was in the ditch with a shotgun? Which time?" Well, her house had been empty for several weeks while she'd been visiting us in Florida. But we were all back spending the weekend with her before trekking back to the Sunshine State. The house is in the for real country. Literally over train tracks, past a salvage yard, and her nearest neighbor, a cousin, everyone is related to everyone who owns a house on the road, ain't within screaming distance. Yes, that seems to be a real system of measurement, screaming distance. Now, it was early in the AM, just like before daybreak. We're awake because these are farm freaks who wake up at the crack of dawn from sheer ingrained habit. We're eating cereal when we hear someone pull up outside. Curious, we all ran to the picture window that looks out onto the front yard. There's a strange truck just sitting there. No one is behind the wheel, though the engine is idling. The truck is, well, old, for one thing. It's old-timey, like maybe from the 30s. You could picture the Jode family heading to California in this thing. It's rusted, but it was probably once painted blue. We stare at the thing, bewildered. Mom asks Grandma if she knows who that is. "Nope, not a clue," says Grandma. She runs to get the phone to call her cousin and ask him to come up. She thinks maybe it's a hired hand and he's just at the wrong farm. Just as she asks him to come on down, the phone goes dead. Well, that was the unsettling beginning. All at once, there is a loud, intense banging on the front door. We all screamed. My grandma, who is terrifyingly resourceful, huddles us into the living room, away from a window where anyone can see us. Then, while Mom, me, and my brother tremble there on the couch, she grabs a serrated bread knife from the kitchen and cautiously approaches the front door. She peeks out a side window very stealthily. She turns back to us with a look of confusion, shaking her head. "No one's there." We all kind of breathed a little easier. Then every goddamn door in the house began banging relentlessly. I can still hear it, rhythmic, terrifying, like all the doors are about to splinter and crack wide open. There were two doors in the basement beneath us, so the sound is also reverberating on our feet. The three ground floor doors are shaking in their frames. We can see them trembling and jerking on their hinges from our vantage point there on the couch. Finally, Mom runs to the window, either from a psychotic break with reality or pure terror. I have no clue. She cries out, "Oh, thank Christ, cousin is here." We run to her and peek out the picture window. There's no one that we can see in the yard, but we can't see all the doors from our viewpoint. Cousin walks by the truck with a shotgun in his hand. Cousin, it should be noted, has pretty much every gun ever made, and he looks puzzled. Looking at the rear of the truck, he then glances in the cab window and he stops. He goes pale, runs a hand down his face, then he begins running toward the house, running towards us. My grandmother flung open the kitchen door as she sees him coming. He shouts, "Everyone, get behind the couch, get down!" He runs past us as we bolt for the couch. The banging starts again. All the doors, and now we can hear the windows beginning to rattle. It's like a tornado or the end of the world is happening. We were all too scared to even scream. Cousin flings open the front door and fires the huge shotgun once. Bang! It was deafening. As he does, the truck roars into life and it sounds like a train. We scramble up. The banging stops mercifully. Cousin begins advancing onto the lawn, gun leveled at the truck. We run behind him, wanting to be out of that shaking, quivering house and never, ever go back in. We wanted to be near the dude with the gun. The truck peels out backwards, cutting across the yard and racing at breakneck speeds. Tires squealing, rubbers burning. Cousin fires again, and we all cower behind him. He blows out the back window with the sound of 1,000 plates smashing into linoleum. But the truck never even hiccups. It just roars down the road. No tags, not even a vanity plate on the back. There was no one behind that wheel. Not a thing.
We all had a clear view. Everyone agreed there was no driver in that cab. Well, not anything we could see anyhow. The police were called. Cousin had to go to his house to call. This was pre-cell phone era. The phone line had been cut. There was not a single boot print in the entire yard except Cousin's, from where he'd run into and out of the house. Cousin reported that there had been no plate, but when he looked into the cab, it looked like something from a horror movie. He said there were all kinds of weird restraints, handcuffs, C-clamps, nylon straps, and he said the floorboards looked covered in what smelled like blood to him. Now, Cousin was famous for his keen sense of smell, and the window was down, so it is possible. Cousin said he thought he saw a blur of something out the picture window and ran to fire the first shot, but missed because once he stood there, nothing and no one was on the lawn or in the truck. Then it shot backwards out of the yard and out of our lives, leaving no answers, just a deep sense of unease every time we'd visit. Grandma and Cousin have since passed. Deeply religious people, they stuck by their unchanging versions of the story until the day they died. My brother, mother, and I have never been able to figure it out. Neither did the cops. I think it should be noted, we don't know how all the windows and doors were banging, and we don't know why we never saw a soul anywhere or how they could get around the sides of the house without leaving a trace in the damp earth.
Beyond the darkness.
We're back. This is the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. We've been talking about the House of the Dead, John Kuykendall's experiences that led him to the paranormal. We're also going to talk about his new passions, investigating cryptid stories and chasing a legend. Legends of the Peak we'll cover here in the next segment. I have to ask you, John, when you have experiences like that at that age, it seems that's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to break you and push you as far away from the paranormal as possible, or in your case, it seems to have just drawn out a deeper interest into this. Why are you so fascinated by continuing your education and investigations into the paranormal?
Well, you know, like I said, when I was a kid, I really didn't understand much of what was going on. A lot of it would scare me, but some of it, too, would. I actually thought it was kind of funny, you know. I don't know why I would think some things were kind of funny, but I would joke about, you know, these things that I would see to my friends, you know, and they would laugh at me and stuff. But we all think was a big, you know, a big game going on in my house. But my aunt, you know, I was talking about my aunt who brought me the Ouija board. She would come over, you know, 2-3 times a week, but she would always talk about ghosts, about things that, you know, that she experienced, or someone that just came to her house last night, you know. And I would be listening to these things that she would be talking about, and it kind of fascinated me, you know. And I just, you know, as I got older, you know, and plus, you know, during my teenage years, I would have dreams about that house. Even after we had moved out, I would have dreams about it. And these dreams would, you know, constantly come back to me. They came back to me until I was in like my early, late 20s or early 30s, you know, before I stopped dreaming about this house in my childhood. And I would be, you know, seeing myself walking, you know, through that certain dining room area. And like I see, you know, people standing there, you know, there's one instance I didn't tell you about, but we were sitting there one night in that room, eating dinner, and one of the chairs that was never, you know, ever sat in it, pushed out on its own while we're sitting there, and no one just really said anything. They just looked at it. But I thought, you know, that was fascinating, and I would always go back into that room, and I would go to that chair, and I would be looking at it, trying to see if it would, you know, move again. But it only did it once, and it moved out maybe about, you know, 8-9 inches, you know. It slid back by itself. Like someone was sitting there with us at the table, and then they just got up and they left. But that was another thing that, you know, I dreamt about that. I dreamt about that chair movie. But like I said, you know, I'm the kind of guy who wants to find out, you know, why, you know, do these things happen to certain people? You know, some people it doesn't happen to, some people it does. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, when I was thinking about, well, you know, I think maybe I'll publish a book. But I really didn't know what it was that I was going to write about or what I was going to talk about in a book. So so through time, you know, I would be talking to people who had certain kinds of experiences, but they never really didn't want to tell anyone about it because they didn't want anyone questioning their sanity. So, you know, a lot of people like me, like maybe 6-7 years ago, really weren't that comfortable to talk about something that, you know, that's happened in their house, or maybe they went somewhere and something happened, you know, on a trip or someplace they may have visited. I, you know, started talking about some of the things that I saw, some of the things that I experienced growing up. And people were, you know, when I started talking about it, people were more, you know, lucid about things that they experienced, and they would start talking to me about it. You know, and I said, well, why don't, you know, we take some of the things that's happened to you and maybe some of the things that, you know, that did you experience, and let's, you know, let me put it in a book, you know, let other people hear your story. But it took me probably about 6 months to finally get, you know, people, you know, said, okay, I'll go ahead and send you my story. And then also, you know, there's been places all throughout the United States. Every state has its own haunted place. And I would get surveys and I would ask people about, you know, what do they think was the most haunted place in their state, and then they would send me that information. And we would also publish it in the book. But in the book, there's stories in there of authors, you know, like people who write books. There's policemen in there. There's doctors. There's you know, like nurses. There's everyday people. There's obviously paranormal investigators that are in there. But they tell their stories and they talk about these dark things that happened to them. And some of them were on trips where they visited places and crazy things would happen to them. Some would be in their home. Someone would be at a friend's house or a relative. And they would give me these stories and I would read them and, you know, this is some really, you know, interesting stuff that this actually happens to so many people. And I just wanted to, you know, have a place where they could, you know, talk about their story and tell their story without someone questioning their sanity. So we compiled a whole lot of stories and a whole lot of things, and we put it into this book. And so now, you know, it's a place where they can come back and they can read other people's stories. You know, they can.
And what's the name of the book?
Haunted America, Do You Believe? That's the first published book that came out September 14th, 2012. You know, and, you know, people, you know, and also in there, it explained to them, you know, the different types of ghosts that they are, different types of hauntings,
sure.
You know.
Well, talk to me before we
understanding.
Right. Before we get into the legends of the peak aspects of your life, you told us about your childhood and some of the most unbelievably strange things that have happened. What was one of the most bone chilling moments you had, though, as an adult?
Now, that's another one. This is a great one. As a matter of fact, this is kind of happened when it didn't supposed to happen. My son-in-law was married to my daughter and Samantha. Well, he was in the Army down here stationed at Fort Carson. And he told me that there was a friend of his that was an MP there on the base, and that there were hospitals that were abandoned. They closed them down back in 2007. Well, he said that his friend had to go and patrol these places 2-3 times a night. And he said that I really wasn't really believing what he was telling me, but he told me that, yeah, he would tell me, he said this MP would tell him that when he would do his patrols, he said that he would see these figures walking in and out of these boarded up doors at the hospital. And he said, and I said, you're the only one that he told this to? He said, yeah, I'm his best friend. So yeah, he didn't want to tell anybody else. So, he goes, but then Matt, you know, my son-in-law goes, you know, why don't you think that maybe, you know, if you get some time, you can come over and maybe you can do a walkthrough and then take a look inside this hospital. Well, there's like 59 buildings, but this is just one of the, this particular hospital had the morgue in it, and then they had stored bodies down in the basement area during World War II. So I had told him, I said, well, you know, I said, whatever. I said, yeah, we'll come out. We'll just take a walk and take a look at the place. So when we went to this place a couple of weeks later, yeah, these are some really rundown, you know, creepy looking locations. And the 59 buildings that they had for these hospitals, now this was a World War II hospital. This was back where they had kept POWs of the Germans and the Italians. And they did a lot of crazy things in this particular part of the hospital that I would come to find out later. So I went over there a couple of weeks later with Matt, and I stopped and I talked to his friend, actually, who wanted to walk in with us on his day off. And so I said, okay, fine. So my wife had asked, hey, you know, can me and the girls come along? I said, yeah, we're just going to do a walkthrough. We're not really going to do much. We're just going to just take a look and see what it's about. So we get to the hospital, this building, and when you look up, I mean, it has this crazy, like haunted look, you know. It's just really a creepy, creepy, creepy place. So it's a two-story building, and so we walked in, and there's no power. It's totally dark. But this is daytime now. We're there in the daytime, but it's totally dark on the inside. And so we get in there, and we just start, you know, just kind of walking, looking around. And we're going down this one corridor. It's a long hallway that goes into a big open area where I guess it was a nursing station. And while we're walking down there, we hear a female voice say something in Italian coming from one of the rooms. And I thought it was one of the girls saying something. And I turned around and I like, did someone just say something? And they said, no, we didn't say anything. We've been like totally quiet. But he heard someone, like a woman's voice, talk to say something in Italian. And I don't even know what it was saying. So as we're walking through this, this building, you know, the guy is telling me, you know, the stories, about the bodies that they would keep down with the morgue, where they'd have enough space in the morgue. There's this long hallway that they would just stack them in body bags down this hallway. And he says, but I don't know if we'd have access for that. I don't know if that part is open to the building. But we wanted to go to that area to where, you know, he said that they would store these bodies. So as we're walking, we're going down a few steps to go towards the tunnel area that there's tunnels connected to all these buildings. You know, the particular tunnel area that we want to go to is where they had like 80,000 bodies there. You know, that's a lot of bodies. So we're walking down these steps down to this other long hallway that goes into another open room, and then there's a big door and it would say Morgan and you would go through there. So anyway, so my wife, I've got her camera out, you know, that she had with her. We weren't even there to investigate. We were just there to still walk through. So, but anyway, she has this camera that she brought. It was like a little Polaroid, little movie camera. And she's walking around with her camera. And she just, out of the blue, decides she just wants to start talking to, you know, whatever may be here in this building. And so that's actually one of the segments that I sent you. So she's walking, and my daughter's kind of looking at her like, what are you doing? You know, she told her to be quiet. And so she starts walking down the hallway, and she is talking to, you know, whatever might be there, that, you know, that she's their friend and she's not going to hurt them. And she just, you know, wants to them to tell their story about what happened in here and stuff like that. So she gets close to this, one of the men's bathrooms. And right before she had gotten in there, she said something had brushed the side of her face, like a you know, like a cobweb thing came across her face. And, but she said, you know, it was kind of weird. So she kind of turned left and went into this bathroom. And she's walking around with her camera. And she stopped for a second on her way out because she thought she heard something behind her. And then as she stopped to listen, the door to the left of her slammed shut. And she turned her head real quick, and what the hell was that? And she noticed that the door had just slammed shut. So she reaches over there, and she tries to open the door, and it would not open for like 7 or 8 seconds. So she finally opens up the door. It scared her really bad, and we're all down the other side of the hallway trying to see if, you know, there's some access to get to this morgue. And then I hear her running out of the bathroom screaming, and I mean, she's making some, you know, some nasty words coming out of there. And I went down there and I go, what's going on? What's going on? And she goes, that door just shut on me. I go, what door shut on you? That bathroom door just slammed shut on me. And I'm looking at her like, what do you mean it just slammed shut on you? So I went down there and I'm looking, you know, at the door, and, you know, I'm asking them who just shut the door. But there's, you know, there's no windows in there. You know, there's nothing. There's no kind of breeze in there. There's no kind of any breeze in the hospital anywhere. So she says, yeah, it's shut, and I couldn't open it. I couldn't. I'm yelling for you. I'm screaming for your name. You know, I said, I didn't hear her, though, until she came out of the door. And so I went back to the door, and I shut the door, and I opened it back up really easy. You know, I said, well, the door, you know, opened up pretty easy for me. She says, because I thought, you know, maybe it swelled up a little bit. It's an old door. Maybe it got stuck on you. She says, no, it would not open. I'm turning, I'm yanking, I'm pulling. So I shut the door, and I opened it up again real easy. So that was kind of strange to me. So I said, okay, so let's, you know, maybe there's something going on here, you know. So she went ahead, and she was standing by the wall right outside that bathroom door with my two daughters. My son was standing in one of the big rooms where they kept some of the really, you know, the sicker people, I guess, in this part of the hospital. So anyway, but she's standing on the wall, and again, this cobweb effect thing came across her face. And she just told me, she said, John, something just touched my face. And I said, what did it feel like? She says, like a tickle. And I said, well, did it feel like a tickle or a cobweb? She says, yes, like a cobweb. And just at that point that had happened, I have the camera that she had in my hand, and I have the camera facing them. And at that particular moment, something really fast went through, like through my camera, like really fast, like a light, like a really bright light. Well, I didn't really catch on to that at that particular time until I, you know, uploaded the footage and I looked at it later. But during this time that she's standing at the wall, I mean, she's starting to get a little bit spooked out. My daughter got her hair pulled while she was standing there. We started hearing light bulbs being thrown across the hallway, crashing on the floor. And my other daughter, who was with Matt, which is my son-in-law, down on the other part of the hospital, she's coming down and she's walking through one of the doors down into our area. And she felt someone grab her hand and start walking or trying to hold it like a child. Trying to hold her hand, and she pulled, jerked her hand back real quick. Like, ooh, what was that? You know, and then, but anyway, but this hospital was really crazy. Now, there was another part of the hospital that I heard about. They called it the blood room. And my son had his phone on, and back then he found that, you know, that ghost app type phone that he had put on his phone. But he turned it on, and he said, I'm going to download this ghost app and see what it's like. So he downloads this ghost app. And while he's using this ghost app, it had told him, it's something that had came over, it said east. It said east. And so we didn't quite understand what that was. But when we go back, because I wanted to see this blood room that everyone would talk about, so we got down to the area where the blood room is at, and there's a big, blood drip marks on the wall as we're approaching it. And as we make a right to go into this room, this is supposed to be the torture room where they tortured these people for information. So I walk into this room, and sure enough, as I'm looking up on the wall as we walked in, the word East is printed on the wall. So that kind of correlated to what he had just got on his phone when the word East had came up. Something wanted us to go to the East. And actually, this room was actually towards the East anyway. But we got there to this room, and I'm looking around this room, and I could not believe the blood spatter that was all over this room. I mean, this place, I mean, they must have...
And you could still see it.
Oh, yeah, you could still see it. Yeah, a lot of it was dried up, too, but you could still see it. But it's everywhere. I mean, you can see the body marks dragged across the floor. You could see some what we thought was brain matter on the, still dried up on the walls. But now, after, like, we're there 9 hours through the whole day. We just decided, you know, let's just stay here and just see what happens. We weren't really equipped that day to see, you know, to really do much of an investigation, but we did the best we had with what we had. So I just told the girls, you know what, just turn on your phones, because phones got natural IR on your phones, you know, so just go ahead and just start recording on your phones, just whatever you can record. And so, you know, my daughter would get these light anomalies that would shoot through her phone. She would hear things through her phone, like the hospital was still in operation. You know, you can hear the nurses' stations running. And you can hear people talking. You can hear little children. Now after this whole night and everything was done, I decided, you know, to sit down one day. You know, I'm just going to look at all this footage to see what everybody got. So I said, hey, everything that you guys got, bring it to me. So I'm looking at some of the footage, and that point that I told you where after my wife had the bathroom door slammed on her, she was standing on the wall, that light that shot through my camera real fast. Well, like I said, it moved so fast, it kind of looked like someone like turning a flashlight going past your camera. So I looked at that, and I said, wait a minute, there's something in that footage. I just got to be able to see it. So I went ahead and I slowed down the video. And sure enough, as I got slow enough, I saw what was going through the video. And now it took me a minute to really look at, to see what I thought, mm-hmm. I was seeing. Now, things in life that you think, you know, that you would see on horror films or you would see on a sci-fi channel that you think would not exist. This anomaly that came through my camera lens was a troll. And I got the apparition of a troll on my camera, and I'm looking at that, and I just can't grasp at, is that really what that is? And sure enough, you know, and I had other people look at it and other people look at it, and everyone, yeah, that's exactly what that is. And you can see the two arms, and, you know, that come in the first part of the frame, there's two arms that come down, and it looks like it's in a doctor's coat. You know, like has a doctor's coat on it, and has those two black misty hands in front of it. And then as it's coming to frame, you can see, like, looks like a werewolf hair going back, and it's got that long dropped chin, little nose, and the long pointed ears that point
Holy
back.
Holy cow.
And
do you have this posted somewhere where people can see this footage?
Yes. It's been on YouTube for years. On the USA Paranormal, if you go on their YouTube and USA Paranormal, you'll see that footage. I got the footage in different types of, different formats on there and different versions of it, but the same aspect of what happened, you can see in the film. But that's not the only thing. Cause this thing, like, it had to be standing next to my wife, because it was rubbing on her face, you know. It must have been attracted to women, because it never really messed with me or my son, but just the girls. So, but
when I have my camera and we're going through some of the footage, through the big room that my son was standing at, there's these two doors. So one on the right and there's one on the left. And in front of that left door, there was a little figure standing in front of that door. And I didn't notice it right away until, you know, because of some of the footage was kind of pixelated. So until I kind of like, you know, cleaned it up a little bit and I saw this little, like a little girl or a little boy standing in front of the doorway. And when this anomaly shot off like really fast, it went to that direction of that other apparition that was standing at the door. And so we think it was actually chasing the other apparition that on the other side of the room at that particular time when it showed up on our camera. So it saw it and it kind of like took off real fast after it. But this is something that's always, you know, to this day has really intrigued me, because if these things, I mean, because if someone's seen a troll today, if it's not human, you know, people don't really, a troll really can't. But
right.
This is exactly what it was. I caught this troll, another troll, and another piece of footage that I had at Cheeseman Park in Denver. My daughter, Stacy, who was like 15 at the time, we took a photograph of her, well, quite a few photographs of her, but this particular photograph that we have of her, and I also have that up here on my Facebook page, on her right arm, on one of the photographs, you can actually see another troll to the right side of her arm. It's attached to it. And it was another strange, you know, why are we seeing these trolls now? We're catching trolls all the time on our video.
That's crazy.
But,
well, that's got to kind of be what's kicked your interest into the cryptid world into high gear as well. Let's cover that when we return. I've got to do
exactly.
This. We've got to take a quick break right here on Beyond the Darkness.
As you may know, recently, my little Ford Explorer, actually it's not so little, went the way of the dodo. It died. It was gone. Just like that. Cracked a head. Just like I did many years ago playing football. Yep. Sad, really. I had to feel comfortable going out and finding a replacement. And I'm not so comfortable in that big wide world of cars. I'm really not. What was I going to do? Well, you know what? I had a solution right at my fingertips. Right there. TrueCar. In order to feel comfortable that I was getting a fair price, I needed pricing content, information that empowered me to feel confident. And I had it right there with TrueCar. I could see what people in my local market paid for the car I wanted. And I did find the car I wanted, by the way. From there, I could connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer, and I enjoyed a more confident car buying experience. In fact, in the time it takes to eat lunch for me, and I'm a slow eater, but I'm not that slow, I got my car. Using TrueCar, you're easily going to find the car you want. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area are paying for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can just breeze on in there and feel confident. Once you register, you'll see real pricing on actual inventory. It's competitive pricing offered to you only by a TrueCar certified dealer for an actual vehicle on their lot. It's pricing you'll see before you go to the dealership so that you can feel confident when you show up. And with TrueCar, you can connect to a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience just like I did. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar users are saving, get this, an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. Isn't that amazing? $3,000 off MSRP. There are over 13,000 dealers on TrueCar. Over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles if you don't want to shop for a new vehicle on TrueCar. And again, that average savings, over $3,000 off MSRP. Isn't that something? And when you're ready to buy, take a look at it. Visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. TrueCar.
All right, we're back and talking with John Kuykendall. John, you've talked to us about your paranormal encounters and some of the weird stuff, and that was crazy. And to capture what you can only describe as looking like the quintessential trolls, was that kind of your introduction into the world of cryptids and other anomalies besides ghosts?
Yes, that was something that really intrigued me because, you know, like I said, this is one of the things that, you know, I would always think about. After I saw this troll, these are things that you would think that would not exist. Okay, so I never in my life thought trolls existed. Okay, that was just something, like I said, I saw on television, something that somebody made up. But when I saw this thing for myself, and to really think about, well, if these things exist, I mean, I don't, you know, like these trolls, they might be, you know, in more of the darker side of the demonic type of things, but seeing it for myself, that got me thinking, you know, because right. ever since the Patterson Gimlin film back in the Bigfoot days, I was always intrigued by that too. Then the Legends of Boggy Creek came out. I was always intrigued in these cryptid type of creatures, but like I said, I was intrigued in them, but didn't really know, well, maybe they're just stories or folklore. But like I'm saying, as I started investigating and seeing certain things, like I've seen demonic things, I've got pictures of demons and things, but when I saw this troll, it kind of looked like a, if you look at it, it could kind of resemble a werewolf. And I said, well, then there's a good possibility that what, you know, people have been seeing about the Bigfoot and about the, you know, the Yetis and stuff, you know, there's a good possibility right. that these things really do exist, you know?
Sure.
So I you know, always wanted to know if Bigfoot really existed. But if these can exist, then maybe, you know, Bigfoot can exist.
Well, and you're in Colorado, because, you know, and there's a lot of sightings out that way of Sasquatch and Bigfoot. Colorado. Have you gone out on full investigations for Bigfoot yet?
Yes, I've gone on quite a few.
Have you had any visual encounters?
Now, visual encounters, like still today, I have not yet seen a Bigfoot, but I have seen a lot of evidence that would say that a Bigfoot existed. So what we would do is check all the, you know, the latest sightings that we have here in the Pike National Forest. So the latest one that we had found was in 2016. And actually, it was on what they call Bigfoot Highway out here, up in Pikes Peak. And we go up into the Pikes Peak National Forest. The government actually put a sign out on the road, and, you know, the Bigfoot crossing sign. You know, they had a creature here that resembled Bigfoot that was actually more or less proven to them by another guy who started this, who got the footprints and got the photographs of the actual creature that was supposed to walk out there. So he had enough evidence to the Parks Department and the National Forest Department to say, hey, you know what, maybe we should put a sign out here to let people know that this is a, because it actually, it crossed it quite frequently. So they put this sign there so people would watch them when they're driving through their car with their cars to watch this particular area. So we went up there. And this was, you know, the latest sighting was, in 2016. So we decided to take a drive up there, and we got to the sign, and we got out, you know, we were filming some of the area, and we had took some photographs. So after we had done that, you know, we were driving up this, what's the, like the north slope of Pikes Peak. And we're driving through there, and I see these, what they look like nests, like a bunch of nests that were made out of the snow. And so I stopped my car real quick, and then we got out and we went up and we started looking at the area, and there was like at least 30 different types of these nests made out of trees. You know, they were wrapped over one of those igloo type looking things, but made out of trees. And a bunch of brush. So we're walking around and we're looking for footprints that might be around. It was kind of hard to see in these things because they were so dense. We're looking for openings. And on a couple of them, we did find some openings
inside. I mean, on one of them, there was still like some type of grass or stuff that was inside them, like something was laying in them. But you know, it was snowing at the time, and more snow had came, so we really didn't get any footprints around these things. But we don't know if these were things that were used to be used, or things that, you know, these Bigfoots moved on from this point. But this was one particular area that these creature is supposed to frequently, you know, to eat and to roam around, go across these roads, and people see it quite often. So we wanted to see it for ourselves. So we spent quite a few hours out there, but, you know, we really didn't see any Bigfoot. But, you know, like I said, when we first saw these nests, that really intrigued me, because I said, you know, there's so many of these made. You know, I said, this is something that humans aren't going to come out here and do. This is like way up, you know, off the road, down, probably about 100 yards off the road. But these nests are made. So we looked around, like I said, we couldn't find any footprints or anything. But then as we were driving off on the other side of the road, we did see footprints, first made footprints. So we got out, we took some video and some pictures of it. And the footprints that we saw, they were like bipedal, something walking, you know. And they had a 6 foot stride between one print to the other print. And these prints were like 18 inches long, 5.5 inches wide. And they went, you know, quite a ways up into the forest area. So we documented all that. And, of course, you know, at some of the places that you're not able to actually go and walk on, because they, you know, won't allow it. It's a restricted area. But we, you know, got some close-ups with the cameras and equipment that we had, and we got some pictures of it, which is really intriguing to me, because, you know, what makes that kind of stride and that deep of, they were like 8-9 inches deep into the snow. And I went and I stood on the snow, and I like weighed 230 pounds. And I could maybe go down about 2 inches in the same kind of, you know, the same area where whatever was there before us went down at least 8-9 inches. I mean, it was heavy, so heavy walked on that. So anyway, there's this other place, which is on the other side of Pikes National Forest, which is a place called Crags. And Crags is a really known hotspot for, you know, two Bigfoots that people have seen there over the years, and actually they've been on BFRO. They've investigated that. The news channels have been out there investigating it. Well, we decided we wanted to go out there and also investigate to see if these creatures exist out there. Well, the day that we went out there, apparently the Forest Service had closed down the park indefinitely. And we don't know exactly why they did that. And so...
Oh, you're getting really quiet. It sounds like your phone's dropping out on me.
Okay.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay, yeah. So when we went to Crags, you know, like I said, they shut it down definitely. And so we contacted the Forest Service, and they had trying to give us some story about, you know, well, you know, there were some trees that had to be taken down that were dead trees, and there was a lot of them out here. So it was dangerous for people to be walking down here, so we went ahead and we just closed it down definitely. Okay, fine, whatever. But now, across the street from Crags is a place called Mueller State Park. And this is actually connected to Crags through a roadway up in Divide, Colorado. So we went ahead and went across to Mueller State Park, and we got up there. And, yeah, you know, just looking in there, yeah, this is a good place that, you know, these Bigfoots would probably hide out. So we got up to one of the picnic like type sites, and we stood on the edge of the hill, and we looked down, and man, you know, it goes down like maybe a mile and a half straight down, and we really didn't know whether we were going to be able to walk that and get back up. So, but you know what the heck? So we went ahead and we decided to get our camera equipment out. Start walking. So we start walking down the mountain, and you see trees, you know, like these trees that are snapped, 8-9 feet in the air, right? I mean, they're like really tall trees that just snapped over. You know, well, we know there's been no lightning strikes out here and there's nothing burnt out here, but these trees are high snapped. And so what is snapping these trees like?
Right.
So we start walking some more, and as soon as we get down to the flat part of the basin of this mountain, there is a big nest in the ground. It had to be at least probably about 10 feet, you know, long, you know, 6 feet wide, and it had all of this had wood branches put all over the top of it. And so we're filming this, and we're taking, you know, photographs of it, and we're looking inside it, and you can see an impression of something that was laying in there, you know, probably, I mean, the grass that was put in there was still somewhat green, so it had probably hadn't been gone that long. It might even still be sleeping there. But we saw this first nest down there, and it really, like, wow, you know, what made this? So we didn't know the area too well, so we're, you know, we just start just following, you know, the it down farther, and then we got to this big pond that was probably about 200 yards from this nest. And during this walk through this pond, we've seen all the X's in the trees that were placed everywhere. You know how Bigfoots like to place their X's in places in the forest. Well, we've seen like 7 or 8 different X's in the trees. So we're looking at that. So, well, these must be their markers, you know, for certain things out here, either be for food or be for territory or be for a place that they sleep. So, but when we're walking, we get to this pond, we're starting to see, you know, weird type footprints around the pond area. And like I said, there's still some, you know, some snow on the ground. And so we're walking around this pond, we're taking pictures and stuff of all these footprints. So we get around to a different part where there's another trail that goes deeper into the forest behind this pond. So as we're walking up to this trail, we see two sets of footprints, one veering off to the left, one veering off to the right, kind of like going on the trail and then kind of off the trail into the woods. So again, this is more stuff that we documented. Now, these prints that we saw, again, a good 15 inches long, 5 inches wide, really deep impressions, one after the other, bipedal walk, going down this trail. And they had, like, again, like a 6-foot stride in front of them. And of course, you know, we can't do that. We tried to do it. We could do that. Ours was maybe about 3.5 feet. But these footprints are deep into the snow. And the snow's kind of hard, you know. It's not that really soft snow. So the footprints were a good 8-9 inches deep. So I went again, and I stood next to these things. I'm pressing down on next to the footprint, and I cannot go down maybe 1 or 2 inches. So something is definitely big. Something is walking back here. Something is coming up to this pond getting something to drink. And this is where these footprints are leading to. Now, this is also bear country. Right. So, you know, we didn't want to walk too far back off that trail because, you know, we were afraid that we might get into some bears. So now I'm going to stop all this and come back again. We did this again 3 months later. We wanted to wait for some of the snow to melt down and come back when there wasn't any snow. So 3 months later, we went back to the same area. Now, remember now I told you about Aaron Oakes, right? He did your guys' show back in 2012
right.
On Paranormal Challenge. Right. Anyway, so he decided, you know, hey, I want to go with you, man. This is really cool. I want to see what this is about because these things also intrigued him. So I took him out, and I'm showing him the stuff that we caught the last time, things that we photographed, things we documented the last time. So now we go out the second time. Okay, so we went ahead and we took the same trail down that we did 3 months prior, and now a new nest that me and our Xavier, which is actually my camera guy, saw just adjacent to the other one that we saw there. Now this one here was kind of strange because this nest was put up on the side of the hillside on some rocks, like these big boulder rocks, and what it is something moved a big tree that was about 12-15 feet long, and probably, it had to weigh at least 1,000 pounds. So no human is going to put that up there. So when this big tree was put there, then there was other branches and other parts of tree branches put around this thing. And there was an opening in and an opening out, and it was really, big on the inside. So we're looking inside it, and again, something, there was some type of bedding inside. Something was laying in there. You can see something was coming in and out of it. But something that can move 1,000-pound tree in the position that it was at wasn't no kids. It wasn't no human out here doing this, Now, when we got done documenting all that, again, we went back down to that pond area. And then we went ahead and we walked that trail behind the pond, and we got about 150 yards down the trail, and we stopped because we see this big, this trail is like 5 feet wide, and it has a little bit of embankments on each side, which are made out of dirt. And then there's a forest on each side of it. So when we got down there, about 150 yards in, we saw an impression in the side of the embankment, like something was crossing the trail. When we get over there, and we look at this print, and Aaron, he puts he's got like a 13-inch foot, and he puts his shoe and his foot right next to this print that we saw, and it's just about as big, or maybe a little bit bigger than his foot, and it's about 5 to 6, inches wide. And so when I'm looking behind me, because something apparently crossed that trail, put his foot there, and went off into the forest area. So we're looking around to see if there's any type of, grass that's been, or any type of brush that's been, matted down from something walking through there. And we saw a little bit of what could have been something. So we decided to go ahead and just follow the direction where that footprint went. So my camera guy stayed on the trail, and we walked about 30 yards in, and we got to a little small little creek that was running through there. And Aaron had his stick, and he wanted to stop and do some tree knocks there. And so, okay, so he stopped. He did 3 tree knocks. Probably about 30 seconds later, we hear knocks coming just off to the left. So he looked at me, I looked at him, and we were like, oh, could that be, I don't know, maybe it could be. So he went ahead and he did 3 more knocks. Now, quicker, within 5 seconds, we heard 3 more knocks just to the left of us. Oh, that was intriguing. So that was not the weird part. The weird part about this whole thing was, when we were there this trip, is that we're standing there, and you start to hear something walking really heavy. Like, we thought a bear was fixing to come up on us. That's how loud and how close it was. And we're standing and we're looking at each other like, oh, wow, what the hell is that? We're looking around. We don't see anything at all. But you hear these bipedal footprints walking. So we turn around, look at our camera guy, make sure he's not moving. He's not. And he's looking at me, and he's saying, yeah, he hears the same thing. He's hearing it too, and he's like 30 yards behind us. And so we're looking around, and the thing, crunching on the ground, walking. And now it's starting to get a little bit spooky, because we're thinking something's fixing to come up on us. But we didn't see anything. We still didn't see anything. We're looking, you don't see nothing. All right? So next thing you know, we hear this like howling, growling sound. Kind of a distance, but close. You could hear it really good.
Right.
But it was kind of like it was a distance from us. But we're still hearing this walking. We don't know where it's coming from. We don't, it doesn't sound like a bear. I've heard bears walk and stuff like that, but this was something like walking. Dave, if you were there, and you, it was like you could turn around and something's going to be in front of your face. That's how close this was. But now for us not to see anything, but to hear that, the walking was so intense that it scared you. I mean, your heart starts beating because you're really thinking that something's going to be there, but there's nothing. So now I'm thinking, okay, what are these things like? Are they cloaked or something?
Right.
That's what I'm thinking, like in my head. You can't see them. You can hear them, but you can't see them. But this
and
was
what are
this
you what are you feeling? That, walk me through that emotion. I mean, you're hearing this. It's got to be a mixture. You've got to be kind of excited, but how much of you is butt clenching and kind of wanting to just get the hell out of there?
Yeah, that was the thing. You know, me and Aaron were looking at each other. You know, what do we do? You know, well, I'm here for it, dude. You know, I'm thinking. You know, I told him. I said, no, just be still. Just stop and listen, you know, because if these things existed, I wanted to see it for myself.
Right.
You know, if something comes walking out of that, of those trees right there, I want to see it. I want it on film. I want to see it with my own eyes. So I know for myself, I know what I'm seeing, you know, and he's kind of looking at me. He says, well, you know, this is freaking me out type of thing. But he said, okay, we'll go ahead and we'll stand our ground here for a couple more minutes. But when this thing is walking, you know, your heart's beating real fast because it does. It really scares you at that. But when you hear something like that,
yeah,
you know, because my first initial thought was it was a bear. You know, I didn't want to come up on a bear, but this wasn't a bear sound. This was something walking 1 foot in front of the other, bipedal walk, heavy, like something running like big, really heavy, like 800 pounds, big, wow, heavy things walking, you know. So, but this was definitely one of the most, even not seeing a Bigfoot, but just that paraphernalia of a Bigfoot, of what you see and what you hear,
right,
is enough to scare you. So I don't know what I would have thought, say, if I actually saw it, if it had came out of the trees and we saw it, what would I would have done then, you know? But
yet you keep researching it.
Moment.
Yeah, you keep researching,
yeah, I keep researching
and going
it, you
out
know,
there.
Yeah, you know, I do. I want to see one for myself. I want to see if they really exist. I believe they do. There's more evidence out there saying that Bigfoots exist than someone just saying it doesn't. That's just someone just doesn't believe in it. Okay, but like I was saying, you have all of these reports. You have reports from credible people. You know, they have nothing to gain from saying that what they've seen. You know, people know what they see. You know, I can distinguish a bear from something else. I'm sure someone can too. Now, maybe if it's a quite of a distance in front of you, maybe there might be, you know, there might be some misidentification of what you see. But there have been people who've seen these things face to face, within 5 feet of you. People have seen these things, and you would know if that was a bear in front of you within 5 feet.
Yeah, well, I saw one at about maybe 50 to 60 yards away, standing behind a bush, pushing the top of the bush down, and I could definitely tell it was not a bear. And it was
exactly.
No animal I'd ever seen before. So I'm with you. Fascinating stuff, John. And your new book's Legends of the Peak, which is going to be an ongoing series of these kind of investigations and stories. Those are going to be the first one is out and available right now, correct?
Yes, it's available right now. And then 3 months from now, another one, series two, will come out. And like I said, the stories will get more. The first book basically tells what we're doing. Why science doesn't want to acknowledge that Bigfoot exists, but the government actually does, you know. The government's willing actually to put you in jail if you shoot one. But like I was saying, they say they don't exist, but they put but our national forests are putting signs out. The police departments in California are telling this paranormal group, hey, look, you know, you want to kill a Bigfoot, if you do, we're going to put you in jail. Okay, but they don't exist. But they don't exist, so why are you going to put me in jail if I shoot one? You know,
yeah.
But like I'm saying, they're saying that these things don't exist. But like I'm saying, the government acknowledges. You know, the Army's even had their, you know, had their time with Bigfoots. You know, back in the day, everyone has recorded or reported or have seen these creatures. You know, for such a long time. But like I'm saying, there's no bones, but there's been some DNA, and I've also talked about the DNA that's been found in there, and what link it has with humans, and why, you know, we think that Bigfoots might be part human, and why they have such intelligence to them, and why they're so elusive.
Well, fascinating stuff. I'll look forward to reading the rest of the books and keeping up with you on that. John Kuykendall, our guest, thank you so much for joining us today, John. It's been a pleasure talking with you about the House of the Dead and the Legends of the Peak, Chasing a Legend, the Legend of Sasquatch. We appreciate your time, sir.
All right, thanks, Dave. I appreciate being on.
All right, take care. That's it for this week. We've got a whole new week of the best in paranormal talk radio coming your way. Next week, starting off with more supernatural news and parashare. We've got some true crime heading your way and more. Plus, I do want to make a quick mention. We are looking for stories. Do you know a killer? We have shared these stories before. We want to hear from you. You can email me, subject line, I know a killer. Always curious. And if you've already written into us before, you don't need to write in again. But we may include some of these on our True Crime Tuesday shows going forward. We'd love to hear from you. So please let me know. And again, we're looking for your encounters with real serial killers or murderers. How do you know them? What happened? And tell us a little bit about your story. You can email those to me at dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. That's it for this week. Be safe, be kind, be loving to one another, and please keep all of the people in the way of Hurricane Irma in your thoughts and prayers. And focus on that again, folks. Just picture that hurricane dissipating and falling apart and blowing out to sea, avoiding the East Coast and Florida and all of the islands. Just try to imagine it breaking apart. Send prayers, intention, white light, whatever you've got. Let's try to steer this thing away from the mainland and save some lives and some property. That's it. We'll talk to you again real soon right here on Beyond the Darkness.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.